priesthood. But anyway, now we have Joseph in Egypt here, a good man, the righteous now, suffering at the hands of the wicked, and for their wickedness. And yet at the same time, this is the Lord's way now of bringing his people into Egypt. He had told Abraham to dwell in a land that is not theirs, foreign land, 300-400 years now. And he'll bring them out. And this is now the way God's working it to bring them down there. God's providence. I'm a strong believer in it. Have been all of my Christian life. God in his providence rules in the lives of people to bring about his purpose. Accomplish his divine purpose. And I still think that's so. Now that 38th chapter is one of the ugliest chapters you'll have in all the Bible, I think. And I don't think I'm going to read that. I'm going to call attention to it here. Right, this deals with Judah now. It came to pass at that time that Judah went down from his brethren and turned into a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. That seems to be the city of Adullam, and that was north. If you think about Jerusalem up here, and according to the map that I have, I don't know whether they know or not, here's Jerusalem and here's Hebron down here. And here's Adullam up here. Thought about a sort of a triangular. Now, there are others who think that the cave of Adullam was down here over in this area nearer the Dead Sea. Now, of course, those places back there, we don't know where they were. Now, why did David do that? Judah. Was Judah sort of put out with his brethren, or was his conscience hurting him? Did he want to get away from his father's presence? What was it? I don't know, but it doesn't show himself to be a good man. For he saw that a daughter of a certain Canaanite, whose name was Shuah, as a Canaanite was, and he took her and went in unto her. That is a Canaanite whose name was Shuah, and he took her, his Shuah's daughter, went in her. Later on, she's spoken of as his wife. He married her, took her to his wife. And she conceived and bare a son, and called his name Ur. She bare another one named Onan, and a third named Shelah. Now, this Ur was a wicked fellow. Ur is firstborn, and he took a woman by the name of Tamar to wife. Now, here's an ugly side to this. Judah now is intermarrying with these Canaanites. That means they're going to be Canaanitish blood then through Perez in the Christ. When Christ comes, there's Canaanite blood in his veins. Of course, mostly Jew at that time, practically none. But at any rate, we think of it as so. Tamar, and Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of God. God slew him, allowed him to die. So then he sent Onan in to... Now, evidently this idea of the Levirate marriage was even a custom at that time. We know it was a part of the Jewish law, but that came 400 years later. So, at least several hundred years later. So, but at any rate, that seemed to be a part of it. So Onan took it a wife, but he refused to do the service of a husband. He didn't want her to have children to his brother, so God slew him. Right, then the Lord told Tamar to wait then for this third boy, Shelah, and he would give him to her in the proper time. I'll give you Shelah, my son, when he's grown up. But now in the process of time, Shua's daughter, the wife of Judah, died, and Judah was comforted. That is after consolation, after his grief was over. He went up unto his sheep shearer to Timnah, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. Now, on his way up here, he had not given Shelah unto Tamar. He hadn't kept his deal there. So Tamar then, seeing that he was not going to, put away her garments of widowhood, dressed as a harlot, went out and sat in a prominent place, and Judah comes along, thinking she's a harlot, and wants to go in unto her, but he doesn't have anything to pay her. So he said, I'll send you a kid of the flock. So how do I know you will? He said, give me a down payment. Give me a guarantee of it. Well, what do you want? She said, give me your signet and the cord and your staff. And he did. Then later he sent this kid down there by his friend the Adullamite there. And he couldn't find her. They said, no, never been a harlot around here. Never been a prostitute. That was a religious prostitute. None there at all. Then later on it was discovered that she was a child. And when Judah was told, look over here at about verse 24, 25. And they told Judah that his daughter-in-law had played the harlot. And Judah said, bring her forth and let her be burnt. I don't know if that was a custom in that day. I don't know what, but it seemed like it. But he has absolutely control over her as belonging unto him because she had been his son's wife. When she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law saying, by the man whose these are am I with child. I know she has confidence that he'll, she sent him to him. Now he could have destroyed them and said, no, I don't know anything about that. But at any rate, she knew he wouldn't do that. Am I with child? And she said, discern, I pray thee, whose are these, the signet and the cords and the staff? And Judah acknowledged them and said, she is more right than I, more righteous or right than I. For as much as I gave her not to Shelah, my son, and he knew her again no more. Now then, she could not be given unto him, unto Shelah, because of this incest with the father. So now then, Shelah is freed from the responsibility of taking her, and she, I don't know whether she married again or not, I think so far as I know we lose sight of her. Right now, later on, instead of bearing one child, she bears two children, a twin here, and the name of the one of them was Perez, and the name of the other, Zerah. Now, Perez here, which really means a breach, well, actually it means breaking forth or breaking through, literally. To break, now, a breach is a breach in a wall where you go break through, so literally the word means breaking through. So here, as the midwife said, that the first one put a finger out, she put a scarlet cord on it, drew it back. Then Perez was born, and she called him Breaking Through because he had broken through and was the first one to be born. Now, Perez is in the lineage of Christ. And you'll find that over in Matthew, the first chapter, and on down through here. So he was a descendant of Judah, but it was in a very unwholesome, wicked way by a Canaanitish girl. Oh, yes. Says what? Well, I guess so. That's it. That's it. And then the little scarlet rope would come to later on that Rahab had there. Yeah. So you find two of them in there. This fellow said all the way through the Bible, so I never did. And I didn't know where to look for those two, but I was hunting for one and sewed together with it. Yeah, I had some students in college who knew just about that much, too. And when they got there, and I run into quite a few of them about knew about that much. All right, so that to me is an ugly chapter, very ugly chapter. Now, whereas the first chapter, very interesting, here's one now, very ugly. Now you come to another one that's a combination of both, the beauty of Joseph and the ugliness of the wife of Potiphar. All right, and now let's come to the end question. All right, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hand of the Ishmaelites that brought him down thither. Now, you see, that's practically exactly the same statement as you have back here, except the Midianites back here, Ishmaelites over here, and identifies them as the same. Look at verse 36 and chapter 37. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's, the captain of the guard. Over here, Joseph bought a Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hand of the Ishmaelites. So that clearly identifies that two is the same. And so I'll let you work out why they were called one and why they were called the other. You work that out. I don't know. I just simply think they were Ishmaelites by blood who dwelt in the land of Midian. And that's been my answer for a long time. And this clearly establishes the oneness of the two groups. Right? And Jehovah was with Joseph. Now notice this all the way through. And he was a prosperous man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that Jehovah was with him, and that Jehovah made all that he did to prosper in his hand. Now notice that Jehovah does this. Now this is an interesting thing about the Bible all the way through. The Hebrews always recognized the hand of God in their affairs. I think we should. I can't explain it. I don't know how God makes one man to prosper and the next man doesn't prosper. But somehow the man that doesn't prosper, if his faith in God, Why, he may have a deeper faith and have something the other man doesn't have. So don't complain because you don't prosper materially. You may prosper more than the material man. So what's that you got? They slew 600 Philistines with. So use whatever's in your hand. This is the idea. So if I have one talent or two talents, rather, I'm given one or two talents, whatever it is, that's responsibility according to my ability. Be grateful for it. Over in Romans the 12th chapter, Paul speaks there of the gift that God's given to us. He didn't give us all the same. Whatever you have, use it. Be grateful for it. There are a lot of things I wish I could do. I wish I could sing. Can't sing a lick in the world. And all right. There are some other things I wish I could do. But only two things I can do is teach and preach. That's all. And whether they are right up to the top or wherever they may be, that's all I can do. Be grateful for it. I'm glad I can do that. If you can't do that, but you can do something, be glad of it. Be grateful for it. And so thank God for the gift that He's given you and use it. That's the idea. So I think that this is a lesson we can learn here. But it's God that made all things here to prosper in His hand. And Joseph found favor in his sight, and he ministered unto him, and he made him overseer over all his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. That he put everything under him. He saw here a man prospering, and he knew that God was doing it. Notice. And it came to pass from the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that Jehovah blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of Jehovah was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And now notice that Potiphar here left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught that was with him, save the bread which he did eat. That doesn't mean he selected the menu. It simply means that all he was concerned with was something to eat. When he came in, why, have something to eat, and that's all. You run the rest of it. You just run. That's all he was. That's all. That's wonderful, wasn't it? All right? And Joseph was comely and well-favored. I think there are two other men that are so spoken of in the Bible, and that was David and Absalom. Both of those men were comely, well-favored. I may be another one, but I remember those two. The Old Testament. But anyhow, he was a handsome fellow, and what we say well-built. He was a well-built young fellow. Probably strong, muscular, and very handsome. All right, now, at first, Potiphar's wife didn't pay any attention to him. But after a while, she did. All right? And verse 7. And it came to pass, after these things, that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. Now notice here, and it came to pass, after these things, after he had developed there, and she saw what he was spent into at first, just another slave, but after he developed into the handsome, well-built, fine-looking young man that he was, and she cast an eye upon him, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife. Now notice here are three things that he says. Three grounds. Behold, my master knoweth not what is with me in the house, and he hath put all that he hath into my hand. He is not greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me, but thee, because thou art his wife. All right? Now, so this is the second. First of all, he put everything into my hand, and I can't betray that trust and confidence. Second, you're his wife. I have no right to touch you. How then can I do this wickedness and sin against God? All right, now here's a relation to his master, a relation to this woman who is his, the master's wife, and a relation to God. Now, that reminds me of David after he committed his sin. In Psalm 51 and verse 4, when he said, crying out against thee, thee only have I sinned, and have done that which is evil in thy sight. What does that suggest to you? that all sin ultimately and finally is against God. Now, with David, Bathsheba was involved, Uriah was involved, David was involved, the family was involved, the nation was involved. Yet when you summarize it all up, against whom had he sinned? God. All sin ultimately and finally is against God. All right? Now then, so here then is my relation to my master, and you're his wife, a relation to you that I cannot violate. Your relation to him, I can't violate that. My relation to God. I want you to think about this for just a moment. Now, here's a young man, I don't know how old he was, 17 when he was sold down. I don't know how much later this is. He probably in his 20s now, early 20s, I don't know. But then he has a young fellow away from home, in a foreign land. And his daddy hadn't made any effort to find him, so far as he knew. He doesn't know what the story was that got back. Maybe he thinks, well, my dad knew that I was sold down in him, but he made no effort to find me. Nobody knows. Nobody cares. Why don't I just go ahead? But not so. Faith in God, his consciousness of what was right, held him back. I think he's the only one of the boys that seems to have invited any of the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and his father Jacob, really imbibed that faith. But at any rate, here's a beautiful story of faith and faithfulness. And look at the difference between that and Judah. Wickedness on the one hand, righteousness on the other hand. All right? And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, and she doesn't give up, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her, or to be with her. He stayed out of her presence all that he could. And it came to pass about this time that he went into the house to do his work. There come times when he had to go in. And I suppose busy about his work, he didn't think to take somebody with him here. And there was none of the men of the house there within. Nobody but the woman. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, see, he didn't even know, call her husband's name, he hath brought in a Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. It came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment by me and fled and got him out. Now, what is she seeking to do? Not only get him in trouble, but also to escape suspicion on her part. Now, you see, none of them were there, and they were to see Joseph leaving the house the garment there. How do they know what had taken place there? And so she wants to put all the blame on him and thus escape suspicion on her part, don't you see? Very sly woman. Said a while ago, these chapters have all of the elements here of a soap opera, really. Well, I don't watch soap operas, but from what I understand, they've got all of this in there. They've got old Judah in there, and they've got, of course, old Potiphar's wife. Most every one of them are Potiphar's wife. They don't have many Josephs. That's the only thing. I don't think they have many Josephs in these soaps from what I hear about them. All right? She lifted up her voice and cried, and she laid up his garment by her, and his master came home, and she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant whom thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. Now, does that suggest here that he came in to rape me, and now then, if you let him stay around here, he'll rape others of the household? He'll do the same thing with others. She's a very conniving woman here. You can see that. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment by me and fled out. Now, somehow or other, through the years that I've studied this, it's been hard for me to believe that Potiphar really believed that. I think if he had, it would have been a more severe punishment than me. Where did he put him? He put him in that prison that kept the king's servants there, not in the common dungeon, or he would have put him to death. He'd have really believed what his wife told him, but he didn't. came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. Well, he has to show indignation. And maybe he was. Maybe he believed it. Somehow have a hard time believing that he did believe his wife. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were bound. Now, I have no way of knowing whether they were treated better or worse. Were the king's servants put in a prison where they were given a better treatment, or because they were the king's prisoners, was it a worse treatment? You know? Do you know which it was? I don't either. I don't know which it was. But at any rate, there's a difference in there, isn't there? But he put him there. And he was there in the prison. Now notice further. But Jehovah was with Joseph and showed kindness unto him and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. The same favor. Now, here's a great lesson on the value of always doing right. The one that does right always comes out victorious. That's shown very clear here. And so Joseph, who did the thing that was right all the way through, he comes out later on blessed richly of Jehovah. Not always material, but there'll always be a blessing there. All right? And so here now he is put in the king's prison, and the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. Now you see, same as in Potiphar's house. He's going in favor here because he does right. God's blessing him. And whatsoever they did there, he was a doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because Jehovah was with him, as with Joseph, and that which he did, Jehovah made it to prosper. Oh, you have so many statements in the Bible, something like that. Righteousness exalteth the nation, sin reproach to any people. True of an individual, isn't it? Yes, it is. All right. Well, now Joseph now is sold into Egypt. He is put in prison. But now notice the steps here, or the links in the chain of providence, is finally going to bring Jacob into Egypt. Here, first of all, his father's favoritism. He was his father's favorite. That didn't work well, but it was a link in the chain. Second, the father gave him a coat that aroused the hatred of his brothers. He had these two dreams that increased the hatred and aroused the envy of the brothers. They envied him. Right? He went up, sent on a particular day up to Shechem and then to Dothan. And there, it was a certain group coming along going down into Egypt that bought him. Suppose it had been a group going up the other way. Been in the wrong part of the country, wouldn't it? They were coming into Egypt. Now then, Potiphar bought him. Well, suppose somebody else had bought him and carried him on south there in the upper Egypt, and he'd been up there. Well, he'd been in the wrong place again, wouldn't it? All of these to me are links in the chain of providence. And here. Right now, and here's a jealous wife, or rather a wife, an unfaithful wife. Falls in love with him, becomes enamored of him. Was in love with him. I became enamored of him. And tried to seduce him. He wouldn't listen, but fled. Now, his coat, I don't guess that was a coat of many colors, but anyhow, he left his coat with her there. Now then, he put in prison, and he continues to prosper here. Now, notice further. And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker offended their lord. It really means, the word means sin. They sinned against the king. We don't know what they did. There's something there, that their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was wroth against his two officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. And he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard. Now notice where that is. That's the prison, the captain of the guard. Now that leads us to wonder here. Now remember back here in chapter 37, in the last verse there, Potiphar, officer, the captain of the guard. Right? So, and we had it again here that it was the Potiphar here, the captain of the guard here, back in 39:1, bought him. Now here's the captain of the guard. Is that Potiphar? Is he in the prison that Potiphar was over? I don't know, but it sounds like it, doesn't it? I'm going to guess that he was, for he was the captain of the guard. And unless he'd been demoted or something happened to him, he still is. So at any rate, put in the house of the captain of the guard, into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. I don't know whether they kept him in chains all the time. He couldn't if he looked at the thing, but it meant he was committed there, couldn't get out. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he ministered unto them, and they continued a season. That is a time, how long, we don't know, in what. Now again, I want to say, I don't know that this captain of the guard is the same one as Potiphar. I'm simply saying they have the same title. An officer, the captain of the guard. And I wouldn't be surprised, but what Potiphar, knowing how faithful that Joseph was in his house, and how that everything prospered there, but what Potiphar put him in there where he could still use him and still minister to him. I believe that person. I can't prove it, but I rather think that he did. And that shows, suggests to me, he didn't believe what his wife said. I don't think he ever believed what she said. I think they had to put him to death. Don't think he believed it at all. And they dreamed a dream, both of them, each one his dream, in one night, each man according to the interpretation, that means according to the significance of it, interpretation or significance of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt who were bound in the prison. Joseph came in unto them in the morning and saw them, and behold, they were sad. Kind of a bad, you're down in the dumps. They were dejected looking. Notice how Joseph talks to them, and he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in ward in his master's house, saying, "Wherefore look ye so sad today? Why you look so sad? What's the matter with you? What's wrong?" And you'll notice, I think he shows interest, concern, and I think he asks it with kindness. I see in Joseph some of the truly great characteristics that all of us ought to strive for. I think he's outside now. In prison, he's gonna be humble. He's going to outgrow that boyhood cockiness back there, boasting about his dreams. And all. He's going to overcome that. He'll outgrow that. So many boys have that attitude at 17 or 18. They outgrow it a lot different later on. And they said unto him, "We have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it." And Joseph said unto them, "Do not interpretation belong to God? Tell it me, I pray you." Now they say that they believed in interpreters of dreams. There were certain individuals who could interpret dreams. But Joseph said, "No, only God can do that. Now tell it to me, and if it's God's will, I'll interpret the dream. If it isn't, I won't interpret it. I can't, because only God can do it. I can do it if God will reveal it to me." And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream, behold, a vine was before me. And in the vine that were three branches, and it was as though it budded, and it blossomed, blossom shot forth, and the cluster thereof brought forth ripe grapes." Now notice here, in a dream that can happen. Just like you can take a movie camera, and you can put a flower here, and here's a bud, and just turn it a little bit to now, and a little bit later, and a little bit later. And after a while, when you show the picture here, the thing just opens up all at once. You've seen them do that on the movies there. All right? That's what I think in the dream. Yeah, you see three branches here, and here buds, and they blossom, and then they're ripe grapes. And I take them and squeeze them, and by the time I get them in the king's hand, why, it's become wine. Become wine, because those kings just want plain grape juice. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand. And I took the grapes and pressed them into the Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand, all right? And now that's the dream. And I think it's by the time Pharaoh gets it, it's by then wine starts out. Here's a little blossom and becomes wine there by that time. And Joseph said unto him, "This is the interpretation of it." No question about it. The three branches are 3 days. And within yet 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head and restore thee unto thine office. And thou shalt give Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou went washed his butler. All right, now, no hesitancy about it. That's this way it's going to be. Well, God revealed it to him. So outside of these dreams, and the interpretation of them, everything else in the whole thing from back yonder when Joseph was Jacob's favorite on till he becomes the Pharaoh. I think everything except the dreams and the interpretation are a natural process, natural order of things. Well, that it's on that basis that I think I see the hand of God and God's providence. My life and other lives, I look back and I see it very strongly in my life from the time I decided I want to preach down until now, and God using me and developing me and all of that. I think He has. I believe that. But have me in thy remembrance, one request, when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. I've done nothing to be here. I was stolen here, or was stolen, sold for 20 pieces of silver, virtually stolen by his brothers and sold. All right, now, the baker's been kind of hesitant about his because those birds were eating up the food there. And when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, I also was in my dream, and behold, three baskets of white bread were on my head. And in the uppermost basket there was of all manner of baked food for Pharaoh, and the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head. All right, now, that's not going to be such a good interpretation. And Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation thereof. The three baskets are 3 days. Within yet 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head up from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the birds shall eat thy flesh from off thee. A little rough, isn't it? That's right. And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday. I want you to note that after 3 days and the third day here. All right, now let's notice what he says. Behold, three, and he said unto them, these are 3 days back here. Let me go back. I want to get that to be sure. When he says here, the three branches are 3 days. Within yet 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head. Right, then it's called the third day. Right, now that helps you to understand when you read about Jesus, 3 days in the tomb, but on the third day came forth. People have been arguing that. That was a Hebrew expression. Any part of the day was a day. So here 3 days back here, but here's a third day. So you don't have, here's 1 day, and tomorrow's the second day, and the next day the third day. So you really have the parts of 2 days and 1 day. That's all you have. But within was 3 days. Jesus put in the tomb, in there 1 day, raised the next day. Same identical parallel. So you might want to make a little notation of that and on this. Right, now the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and the head of the chief baker among his servants. Right, notice how he lifts up one of them. And restored the chief butler under his butlership again, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. Right? Now that to me is another link in the chain of providence that leads finally unto Joseph getting to the throne. Now suppose the butler had remembered it and put in a good word to Pharaoh, told him how this fellow had treated them, how well, and how he interpreted the dreams. Why, Pharaoh might have taken him out then and turned him loose. Where would he have been when Pharaoh needed to interpret his dream? And so, to me, all of these are links in the chains of providence here. Now, I had intended to go on into the 41st chapter, but we've been here just a little over an hour, and I think we're going to stop there. I'd intended to cover the 41st tonight, but and I could go faster on this, just sort of relate it, but I think it's refreshing to us to read it and to mark a few passages here as we go along and try to make a few observations. All right, so chapter 37, here's the 37, the beautiful chapter here of, yes, the beautiful chapter here of Joseph here and faithfulness, but with a few little ugly points in there. Some are not so beautiful. The ugly chapter 38, Judah's sins here, 39th chapter, Here's a very beautiful chapter of Joseph and his faithfulness and devotion here to his master and in prison, but above all, always faithful to God. A wonderful example for all young people and older ones too here. And recognize sin against God. God's blessing him and favoring him. And I just believe that, and I believe all of my life, I like to think of that passage back in Jeremiah, 18th chapter. He told Jeremiah to go down to the potter's house, and there he would see a potter, a potter's wheel, and he went down there, and he took clay, and the clay was marred in the hand of the potter. But he laid it aside, and made another vessel out of it. The idea there is that that God takes the clay that we get, and he molds that clay and makes of it whatever kind of a vessel the clay will yield itself unto. He wants to make a vessel of honor. Out in every great house, there's a vessel of gold and silver, wood and earth, some to honor, some to dishonor. God's going to make of us what we will let him make out of us. So I see in each of us as a piece of clay in the hand of the master potter. He wants to fashion a beautiful vessel of honor out of us. If we allow him, if we don't, he'll fashion a vessel of dishonor out of us. It all depends on how we allow him to mold the life. Now, somehow I got that idea back, Johnny, before I started to preach. I guess I must have heard some fellow preach on it or heard some man say something about it. But I had that idea in my mind all through the years. I was a piece of clay in the hand of the potter. My prayer for many years was, Lord, mold me as a piece of clay in your hand. Make on whatever you can. I believe he did that. I think he did that. I think he could make out of me, I think he did. Something he couldn't make out of me, I just didn't have the ability. He made whatever he could. Now, as far as the debate, I had few debates. I'm not a debater. So I tried about six of those and found that that wasn't my bale of hay. Right, so I got over another trough and stayed there. So whatever you can do, God will use you to do. Our trouble is, we don't think of ourselves as clay in his hand, letting him mold us. Now here he's molding Joseph. But suppose Joseph had committed a fornication or adultery with Potiphar's wife, could God have made of him the vessel that he did? No, he couldn't have. I think he could have done a lot more with Reuben, the firstborn. But Reuben defiled his father's couch, so the birthright was taken away from him. Judah here, we see in his life some very ugly pictures there. Levi and Simeon, hard, harsh men, who got all those fellows up there and shoot them circumcised and went and slew the whole bunch, probably took the servants with them. But he still used them, but not in the honorable way that he could. This to me is a great lesson of the providence of God, that as we yield ourselves to him, he's going to make of us whatever we let him make of us. I think it troubles us. That's the trouble of most of us. Paul said in another passage in a favorite of mine, in Ephesians 3:20-21, now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all we ask or think. What's our trouble? We don't ask big enough things. We don't think big enough thoughts. I'm talking about spiritual. I'm not talking about a bigger building than this and $1 million and a couple of thousand members. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what he can make out of you, what he can make out of me. He's able to raise Joseph up like this. He made a preacher out of me, not a great one, but I made a preacher. I never was an orator. I always wished I could. I wish I was an orator. I wish I could, they say, get up and wax an elephant. But I never could wax an elephant. Just teach. All I could ever do, just teach. So whatever he can make out of you, let him make it. Some of us too old now to start over, but the younger ones take that to heart. Next week is the Christmas holidays, and many of you are going to be gone. Let's postpone our class till after Christmas. That suit you? All right. So we'll just wait till after Christmas. As far as I'm concerned, I haven't got anything to do but come and teach the class. But to be a lot of you gone, so we'll just wait then till after Christmas. Start in then. All right. Class, excuse me. Thank you for coming. Thank God. Yes, ma'am. Excuse me. No, I'll think about it right after what day is Christmas? I don't know when it is. I know it's 25th. Friday. No, let's make it Tuesday after that, between Christmas and New Year's. Okay? Is there another way to last first of the year? Some are going to be, how many are they going to be gone that Tuesday? Well, we'll go ahead and start meeting anyway. I'm actually to get through with this because I'll have to leave January for 1 week and then I want this finished by then. And then if we want to start something else, we'll talk about that. Anybody that doesn't want to come, how many won't be able to come next week? I just, 2, 3. Rest of you want to come? How many want to come next week? Good, let's come next week, suits me fine. I think about you, not myself. Next week we'll be back, Lord willing.